First, something that I thought you had given up, Bob.
Well, what gave you that impression?
Because, well, go ahead. You tell us what's on your TiVo.
Well, what is on my TiVo, although I'm not fully caught up because they've aired two episodes and I've watched one. That means I have one to go before the new one drops on Tuesday. But ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to the, I want to say, 23rd season, maybe the 24th season of HBO's Hard Knocks.
So last year at this very time,
it's back.
You were in the mode of, I think I'm done.
Maybe I was. The Buffalo Bills season?
Oh, yeah.
This was the Buffalo Bills season.
You were like, I'm done. I can't do it anymore.
Just had nothing. They had nothing interesting. I don't know if access was not given or federal interest was just really low, and it felt like it would have potential because it's the Bills and they're seemingly interesting and Josh Allen and the final year of Sean McDermott, and you're just like,
yeah.
And I feel like I did watch two or three episodes and it had an extremely large bag of nothing. But I feel like the year before that with the Bears and Eberflus and his new beard and trying to talk to Caleb Williams, who had zero time for Eberflus.
Yeah.
Wouldn't even bring notepads into his meetings.
Yes, and like the first 60 seconds of the Caleb Williams season, he's a rookie, and they have some Chicago radio guy saying, like, this is our biggest athlete since Jordan. Just you watch. This is going to transform our entire.
Well, they were playing the.
It was the best.
The Bulls intro, you know.
Yes. And the seasons before that, let's see, we did. Oh, the Lions were before that. That was Dan Campbell.
Is that when we found out about Dan Campbell's coffee proclivity?
And his Metallica lyrics and team meetings and things of that nature.
And the up-downs or whatever that he was still doing with the team.
So, look, it's hit or miss now. We now know that it's way better when the teams help them, and it's way worse, I suppose, when the teams say, yeah, we're going to do the bare minimum because we don't want to be here, and we don't want you in here. We don't want anything getting out. We don't want any problems that will occur because you show so-and-so dropping a pass or you show so-and-so being aloof with his head coach. We just don't want that. Like, how does that help us? This is an NFL promotional vehicle. Allow me to say, one episode into the Seattle Seahawks Super Bowl championship Hard Knocks season, I'm really enjoying it.
You're back.
It might just be because the Seahawks are being cool, and that might just be because they've just won a Super Bowl. But it's really good. And there's a few things. I would like you to try the first episode just to see if I'm right.
Do they train in Seattle?
They do train in Seattle at their facility, which more and more and more teams do. I think the out-of-facility Hard Knocks teams, it might be down to like five. It might not even be that
high. Is it all Southern teams because it's so hot?
Seattle.
Man, I even think most of those are in their places. I don't
know. Like Atlanta, New Orleans. Miami,
we need to look
Jacksonville.
Into that. We need to look into that. But the Seahawks vibe, first of all, their facility, they have this giant indoor facility, but then they also have two fields outside that are beautiful Pacific Northwest grass with big trees around them, and they're right on the shore of the Puget Sound or whatever that body of water is.
That's a sound.
And it's so close. The field is so close to the shoreline that you're positive if anyone tries a coffin corner punt, it's going right in the water. And I don't know how we retrieve footballs out of the water, but it looks really dope. And it's just the type of thing you would probably want to practice football next to. And so they can go inside and outside. The only reason I already was familiar with their inside, I just wanted to share this with you guys to let you know how dialed I am. Dude Perfect did some bits there with Russell Wilson years ago, and
I
recognized it because, you know, I'm on the Venn diagram of no dude perfect stuff and no Hard Knocks. Don't know how many there are of us, but there's a few probably.
All right, I've got the list for teams that train away from home. So we just saw one last year.
Is it just Cowboys and Rams and
the Bills train at that weird college?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And the Seahawks, don't the Steelers go to like Carlisle or something?
Yeah. So Buffalo trains at St. John Fisher University in Rochester, New York. Cowboys, of course, Oxnard. Indianapolis trains, I don't know where this is, maybe you do Grand Park Sports Campus in Westfield, Indiana.
Nothing.
The Chiefs train at Missouri Western State in St. Joseph.
See, the Chiefs used to go to Wisconsin for their camp.
Really?
The Chiefs, Bears, Saints, and Packers used to all be in Wisconsin. And
the Rams train at Loyola Marymount, which we knew that. And, yeah, the Steelers train at St. Vincent College in Pennsylvania. And the Giants train in West Virginia. Are they doing it this year? They're at the Greenbrier.
At the Homestead or Greenbrier, yeah?
Yeah, they're at the Greenbrier.
I think the Saints used to go there.
Because the Giants are renovating their facilities right now. So it's weird, though. Like, the Cowboys are clearly the only ones that go
way out of their way.
Far.
Oh, yeah.
But it's all subsidized. They're not paying a nickel.
No, and that's the thing is, what would random Idaho town pay random NFL team to come train there? You have to have a team that is attractive to both parties, and I guess the Cowboys in California fit like a glove.
Yeah, for Jerry, it just feeds the America's team ethos.
And he goes right from the Mediterranean right to California for a month, and he's living his best snowbird life. That says,
so it's more about them, the family, than the team?
1,000%.
Yeah.
I have to be at training camp. I don't want to be in Wichita Falls. Where should we put training camp that I'll personally enjoy it as a billionaire in my twilight years?
Because as we found out when we were up there, they spend more time in Santa Barbara and Montecito than they do anywhere else.
You don't think our GM is grinding film from yesterday's practice?
No, he's drinking wine at polo matches. We saw it.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a really good season. They unveiled their ridiculous Super Bowl rings, and I realize you could say that every year, but, dude, you would never wear this ring.
I heard somebody, George, maybe talking about this,
you
how stupid they
never
are.
Never wear this ring. This is... like, you wouldn't be able to lift your hand. Like, it's got a button on it that makes it, like, expand. Like,
oh, I thought you were saying that makes it into, like, a paper football that you can kick.
No,
that
might as well.
Now, again, that'd be sweet. But there's a few cool scenes. Who was our British defensive line coach? Aiden? Durden? Aiden Durden, right?
Durden. Yeah.
Durden, that's right. So there was a moment in the first one where there's a fight between the offense and the defense, and the fullback was talking to one of their edge rushers who just got paid. And
just got paid today.
So he just got $42 million for like 3 years, and the fullback, of course, makes fullback money. And so they get in a fight, and the fullback decides to weaponize the contract against the guy by saying, "You've changed since you got your money." And it's really a compelling scene because for the next 30 or 45 seconds, the coaches are just saying to each other, "Yeah, dude, that's way over the line." And
you don't talk about another man's money.
Right. And Durden talked to the head coach, McDonald, and then McDonald pulls the fullback aside and just says, "Hey, man, let's be better than that." And it was really cool. Like, it was an actual moment where something happened that wasn't made for TV. And you can just see if these teams are cool, you know, it can be good television. But more than anything, Corby, it just is part of my training camp gearing up for the regular season.
It
feels good to see the sprinklers and them lining the field and drills and just all that type of thing. And the Seahawks mosaic, it feels different. Like, I don't know much about the Seahawks organization outside of game day. And I thought this was great. So
they don't over-dramatize with the music and everything? Do you ever roll your eyes?
No, and that was – okay, now you reminded me. The Bills one, they didn't have material, and so of the 45-minute episode, like 7 or 8 of it felt like music montage of sprinklers and drills and stuff. And it's just like, let's have some meat.
Right.
Tell me some
or
stories.
Or just shorten the episode.
Fine. Or introduce me to guys I don't know and tell me why they're interesting. Like, it can be done, but it's hit or miss. The Lions season, the Bears season, and the Seahawks season are all of the yay. I see they already signed up next year's, so they announced the Seahawks and the Patriots at the same time in April. And I just wonder if they had those flipped.
If we got
the Patriots Russini training camp, that would have been wonderful, but I guess we won't.
Fight night is here, and there's no better place.
It's 8:40 on the ticket Friday morning with the Musers. We haven't visited with this friend in a while. We know he wants to come on the show. So, George, if you want to reach down to the baseboard here in the studio and open that little mouse door and welcome in the Ticket Mouse. Hey, buddy.
Hey.
How's it going?
I appreciate y'all having me on.
Well, you bet.
Know, not a lot of major morning shows are willing to give airtime to small rodents with little material. Y'all are special. I appreciate that.
You bet.
Y'all have seriously done so much for me. Y'all have let me promote my ill-fated charity events, like my mouse-only charity golf tournament that no one signed up for. Because mice can't swing a club. That was a disaster.
Yes.
And my cat adoption event in Fort Worth.
What was that?
At which over half my family was killed.
Oh, God.
It was an orgy of blood and feline predation.
Oh, God.
Yeah. No, that's a bad idea.
Yeah, a mouse shouldn't do that.
And, of course, my fundraiser for Bill Cosby's defense.
Oh, no.
That was a tough one.
Yeah.
I regret that one.
Yeah.
So... Anyway, y'all are so nice. Thanks you for letting me live at the ticket.
Oh, well, yeah. Sure.
This place has been awesome. I love sneaking in here and drinking all of Matt's micro brews when he ain't looking.
Be careful. Some of those are high in ABV.
Believe me, I know it. And my mouse wife yelled at me coming back from drinking them, too. She hates it when I get drunk.
Yeah, well.
I love getting drunk. And I love all the quesadillas that Monty drops and doesn't bother to pick up. That's nice. I've raised a family here.
You did?
38 families, in fact, over the years.
Because
mouse marriages don't last too long.
You've been married 38 times?
38 times, George.
Wow.
I have a lot of kiods, too.
Kiods?
Yeah, I have over 300 kiods that live in my mousehold. I spoke at Nellie's memorial service.
What?
I didn't see you speak at that.
Unfortunately, no one could hear me because I was down the ground trying to yell. But, but Rick Carlisle almost stepped on me.
Oh, no.
And not by accident either. he's a real son of a bitch. I really wanted to be there for Nellie.
Well, yeah, everybody loved Nellie.
Most people remember him as a beloved coach, but not me. I remember him as my beloved pot dealer for 17 years.
Wow, really?
He was always getting me pot.
He had the good stuff.
He had great marijuana.
Maui wowie.
I think all that THC helped me live longer, though.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, because I've lived 24 years longer than the normal mouse life expectancy.
That's a lot.
I know, and I think it's all that pot, and it could be the clinical trials that I've been part of, too.
Oh.
Because, you know, I was a lab mouse for a lot of years, and the pharmaceutical companies tested something called the immortality drug. Have y'all ever heard of that? I don't even know what that is. But ever since then, my health has been, like, perfect. And I can see through walls.
Whoa.
Wow.
And fly. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. But it has no side effects that I can tell.
That's good.
Other than my heart beating 3,000 times a minute and I know the future.
Sounds strong.
Look at George over there. He's over there like laughing and I'm like, oh, looking at him.
You've been smoking this morning?
I've had a little bit of that Wowie Maui. Uh-oh, what's happening? I don't know.
What's happening?
I don't know. There's still a lot of things I want to do in my immortal life, short immortal life on this earth.
Sure.
I want to try stand-up comedy.
Oh.
But, you know, mice usually don't make good comedians.
Why is that?
Their jokes are really cheesy.
You're off to a good start.
Hey, this was a big week for me.
Oh, why is that?
I finally got the COVID-19 vaccine.
Finally?
Yeah, I could finally get it now that they're finished testing it on humans.
Well, you're on a roll.
Oh my gosh, man. That's so great. What's happening? I don't know.
I don't know. You're kind of fading on us there a little bit. Uh-oh.
Ticket Mouse?
Is he gone?
I didn't even get to give him a gift yet.
Hello?
Oh, there he is.
Okay,
here
we go.
Okay, so I don't know what happened to your mic there.
I don't know. What's going on? Something's happening. I can't tell what.
Yeah, maybe Pat's behind this.
You're fading away, and before you leave, I want to give you something, if I can.
Well, thank you, Craig. I don't know why, but I don't really need anything.
I know you're a big baseball fan, and the World Series is fast approaching.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And so I thought I'd give you the complete unabridged history of the World Series, complete with stories, stats, and box scores. 872 pages.
I hate baseball, but...
What are you doing?
I thought he could catch it.
I said slide it.
Oh, my mouse breasts.
I messed up my baseball terms.
Oh, God.
Are you okay?
Experiencing my last breath.
Oh, no.
I see Mouse Jesus.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And he's standing next to Nelly and an alligator.
Oh, hang in there, Ticket Mouse. So dramatic. No. There's no way that's it.
Oh, I can't believe it. I feel so bad.
Well.
Oh, thank God.
Acting.
Thank God.
Acting. There he goes, the Ticket Mouse.
It's 5:20. It's the hard line on Thursday, and that can only mean it is the Rant Revival, starring Gen X Davey Lane, Corby Snake Cocaine Davidson.
Hello.
And ladies and gentlemen, the one and the only
Gordon Key.
And it's brought to you by
Eatsy's Market and Bakery.
Here are the guys.
Thank you. And Gordon, you were not by the channel when we began E! News. I did plug Twitch. I assume you're twitching tonight?
Yes. Tonight, 7:35, twitch.tv/actualGordonKeith. That's the username. Free of charge, 7:35, triumphant return. Twitchellini.
Sorry about that.
Lovely.
Sorry.
Okay, I have a few I have a few notes that signal that idiocracy is upon us. I mean, we know it is,
yes.
But more evidence that it is. Did you know that we, according to some, avoided catastrophe yesterday? That a civilization-ending catastrophe was rumored to be happening yesterday?
The meteor shower?
No, it's unrelated to the meteor shower. Anybody hear this?
No.
Did you hear anything entitled Project Anchor?
No.
Okay. So NASA had to reassure people that yesterday the Earth would not suddenly lose gravity for 7 seconds.
And go where?
Well, no, that the gravity on
maybe
the gravity on Earth would cease.
Oh.
And that you would just go floating into space.
I thought the Earth would drop.
No.
It's like an elevator that was faulty.
So the rumor says that there were intersecting gravitational waves from colliding black holes that would cause gravity to shut off for 7 seconds. And that the viral posts were warning people that people would be thrown into the air, 40 million people would die, that infrastructure would be damaged around the world, and there would be a total economic collapse that would last more than a decade.
So, no, I did not hear about this, but I wonder if people that were so wrapped up into this, there were like suicide packs and things like that.
Probably.
Like Major Marshall Applewhite, not Major. What were they called? Heaven's Gate.
Heaven's Gate. Yeah.
Heaven's Gate, yeah.
Yeah, and so the Project Anchor part was the conspiracy said that, so this was all a supposed leaked document from NASA, that Project Anchor was the answer to this 7 second end of gravity, and that there was an $89 billion plan of secret bunkers that would house essential personnel and a genetically diverse group of people selected to repopulate the Earth after gravity returns and we rebuild.
Like Clavicular and Margot Robbie are stashed away together?
Yes. And so NASA, they actually had to send an email to Snopes saying the Earth will not lose gravity on August 12th, 2026.
So now, do they keep, this is like the JFK coming back, those
they
idiots.
They keep punting it?
Yes. You just like, well, okay, but yeah, it's going to happen again.
Yeah, we just had the date wrong.
Yeah, right. Well, the original claim.
By the way, where are those people now? Because that was a big thing. They were just
hanging out at Dealey Plaza.
I know, but did that just end? Finally, they gave up?
Is QAnon,
they all deny that they were ever there.
Is QAnon still a thing, or have they moved on?
Interesting. I don't know. Where do those badass people end up?
I don't know.
There's a lack of accountability in all of these spaces, don't you think?
Yeah, there's an incredible amount.
Feet should be held to the fire.
So the original claim about the end of gravity was traced back to a December 2025 Instagram post from an account that is known to publish AI-generated stories.
Oh, God.
So, but it gained traction to the point where NASA had to release a statement.
Did you guys know anyone in any part of your own orbit that had family members that went off the QAnon deep end?
No.
However long ago that was, when it was like a thing. I'm sure it is still, but I heard a couple
of
horror stories.
No, but it seems like I remember people being QAnon... What is it? Like
curious?
Yeah, kind of like that. Like saying, I don't know if I believe all of it, but you know, it's interesting. He's been right about some things. So
so vague.
Yeah, it's that. Well, that's the whole goal, right?
Is that you're supposed to ironically
believe it or just playfully entertain it, and then it becomes real, and that's what eases you into the transition of being a true believer.
And Q was supposedly a deep state operative or a member of the Illuminati or something.
An impractical joker.
Dude, we had...
I liked it, Bob.
The person that I knew, their mother went off the deep end. And they could... I mean, they tried everything. And finally, she ended up getting divorced and cutting off contact with the kids. And they couldn't convince her. And finally, it was just like, what do we do? And game over. Just, we're done. We're done trying. You know how difficult that would be to see a relative like that just go nuts?
Just descend into mental illness? Yeah, it happens.
Does my nephew that became a juggalo, does that count?
It's it's on the same wavelength.
Is he still a juggalo?
We're not in touch, so I'm not positive. I hope his juggalo career is going well, but
all right. This next couple of stories are about food. Yummy food. So there is a new partnership between Cheetos and Blumhouse, the horror film studio.
Okay.
They have teamed up to launch a new Cheetos flavor called Sweet Phantom Heat Puffs. It's a limited time Cheeto that will be released nationwide August 31st. So it is called the Flavor of Fear. It's based on a Sichuan pepper. So it begins, like, the initial taste is a sweet cinnamon sugar flavor.
Yeah.
Then heat takes over, followed by tingling, fizzing, and numbing sensations in your mouth.
Numbing?
Yeah. And so some people that have tested it said that it just, it tastes like French toast sticks and it's not really that hot. But then other people have said that it was, that they still felt them 30 minutes later and that the heat escalated into pain. So the thing is it's
okay.
It's supposed to affect everyone differently. And you're not supposed to know how the flavor fear is going to hit you. It could make your mouth totally numb, or it could give you crippling heat.
No. I'm out.
You don't want to try these on the air?
They don't sound, it doesn't sound
Pam,
fun.
Pam, will you try them?
No, I do not mess with spicy or hot things.
Are you a Cheetos guy?
Lando will do it. Lando will do anything.
What's your chip of choice?
I like Bugles.
He eats plain Fritos. He has those a lot in here.
Yeah, how recently?
Well, I put those in my burritos.
That is such a grandpa chip.
Don't listen to them.
Fritos are great.
Fritos are fine.
But when's the last time you made Bugles your fingers?
Does last week count?
Yeah.
that counts.
Tap your Bugle fingernails on the desk.
Yeah, how do you think I play drops?
Hey, Gordon, can I ask you a question? Gordon?
Yeah. Go ahead.
What's going on with the smoke alarms?
It's still going on. It's still happening.
Still haven't gotten around to it, huh?
No, it's like, I don't know. I don't have a ladder that can get up there.
Vaulted ceilings,
actually, I think I do know where a ladder is that's that tall.
But hopefully it's not rickety.
No, I need a 9-foot ladder as opposed to a 6-foot ladder. Yeah.
Well, they have them. They're there.
Lando, will you eat the Phantom Heat Cheeto?
Yeah, let's do it on air.
Okay. We'll do it with
David. Nothing affects him because he's from Middle Earth. Their systems are different.
Their immunity is different.
Yes.
Yes, Gordon.
David.
Yes.
I'm looking at a story about Jenna Jameson.
Yes.
What'd you say her new partner is? Mila Grosso Campo?
Meatloaf O'Grampo.
Yes. Meatloaf O'Grampo.
Looks like a guy to me.
They identify as female.
Jeez, Gordon, why don't you be a little more insensitive?
Yeah, 1970 called Gordon.
God, what is this?
I mean,
it's not a girl.
I guess when you are a retired adult film star, you don't really care.
No, you take what you can get.
Gays and lesbians.
So this is like, okay. I mean, not that she has to make any effort to not look like a guy, but...
Jugs.
Bob, type in...
I'm going to send you this picture, Bob, and you tell me.
Okay.
Type in Meatloaf O'Grampo.
Oh, no.
It's Milagros.
Yeah, that's her full name, but she goes by Mill for short.
I mean, in these pictures I'm looking at, she looks like Dean Cain, the old Superman.
Dill.
Okay, last thing, while Bob is looking at pictures of Jenna Jameson's new wife.
Not bad.
RFK Jr.'s doctor, Dr. Sean O'Mara, is pumping up a new eating plan that he has developed that he says primes the gut to produce bowel movements that are fast, odorless, and wipe-free. He says that when you start eating healthy, you don't need toilet paper.
Huh.
And to support his claim, he says animals in the wild have no residual stool on their anus.
That's my band name.
Residual stool?
Yes.
And now, put your hands together. Their first time in Dallas.
And so this is his bold claim. Dr. Sean O'Mara says, I could have a bowel movement behind a sheet at a dinner party in the corner of the room and nobody would know.
Really?
Dave's done that.
Would you do that tomorrow at fight night, Dave?
Stand behind a sheet, like backlit? Just pinch one off on the stage
just
into
the
a bucket?
Shadow of Dave squatting like a goat.
So he says that this meal plan.
This is spotlight.
This meal plan requires you to totally cut out sugar, no alcohol, no heavily processed foods.
I'm out. I can't do any of it.
Just so, tree bark.
You know what you do eat? Grass fed meat.
Uh huh.
Eggs. Pickles, yogurt, berries, old world cheeses like Gorgonzola and Parmesan.
Old world?
Old world.
Yeah. And most importantly, fermented foods like sauerkraut and kimchi.
Damn.
Hey, Kim.
It's both Kims.
That improves digestion and boosts your microbiome in your gut that will help melt away visceral fat. And so JFK Jr.
You can't live like that, Gordon.
He adopted this diet after meeting Dr. O'Mara and says that he's lost 20 pounds and lost his chronic aches and pains and symptoms of atrial fibrillation.
Send me that.
And so O'Mara, that if you were to consult with him,
yeah,
that his consulting services cost $18,000.
But he just gave away everything for free.
But he says that if you're going to do this on your own, gradually add small amounts of fermented foods to your diet and then work up to a full serving a day, which is about a half a cup. And eventually the microbiomes start colonizing and eventually you'll start loving the microbiomes and then you'll stop wiping.
Okay.
I don't support the colonizers, but for 18 grand, does he at least provide the sheet, or do you still have to buy your own sheet?
Okay, is that
the spotlight?
Is that the final test? Like you gather a group of people around and you go in the corner with the sheet?
Yeah, you guys smell anything?
You ready?
Is there any residual stool on my anus?
But see, the thing is that dogs and animals, it still stinks.
Rough. Yeah, I mean, he claims that your stools will be odorless, but people are saying that
monkeys still get monkey butt.
That this does trigger gas, and the gas is stinky because of the fermented foods
and the cheese and all.
Yeah. So I don't know where he gets
the sauerkraut
that you will have fast, odorless, wipe-free stools.
Maybe it's all sent in a box and it's all wrapped in a sheet, and the sheet is then used for your
quick
final
news
declaration.
Update. I'm looking at pictures of Mila Gross Ocampo. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I have found
other ones,
these. Yeah,
and I found the non-Dean Cain ones.
Okay,
so yes, I was totally off base, and I've learned, and I stand with those who stand against me.
Does she look like she would love Jesus and former adult film stars?
Sure,
she's very
Jesus
interesting.
Jesus would love former adult stars.
She looks like a badass Marine. Remember in the Alien movies, the later ones with the girl, the Hispanic girl, that short hair that was all ripped.
Whoa.
She looks like her.
Why does she have to be Hispanic?
Because her last name is Ocampo.
She's Irish?
Yes. Ocampo.
But she does kind of rock a fade on the sides.
Yeah, she looks badass.
She's got neck tats.
Getting back to this whole toilet paper situation.
Go on.
I think we just offer up Dave as the biggest challenge to this doctor that he's ever had, and
right.
Settle
can
this
he
thing.
Cure me?
Right.
Wow. It's all right there.
Like, just think what Dave could save in toilet paper every year.
Oh my God.
Gosh, I bet you he plows through it,
and thus the forest.
Dave, you haven't gone to bidet technology yet?
No, I can't afford a bidet.
But it would offset the toilet paper.
Like, yeah, it's like $30.
You have a bathtub, right?
Just go into the shower with the shower wand.
What did Mike used to say? He would dip his butt in the koi pond.
Let the fish feed.
Oh, we are so late.
Oh,
Gordon,
dear.
Tonight, Twitch.
Tonight, 7:35, Twitch.
It's 8:40 on a Thursday morning with the Musers. We'll say good morning to the invasion coming up here in about 20 minutes. We had the big story this morning talking about the sale of the Lakers. Mark Walter is getting rid of them 1 year after buying them for a record $12.5 billion. That's the sale price. And we thought we would discuss the psychology of buying a pro sports franchise as we welcome in Dr. Carlton Maxwell, our sports psychologist who teaches psychology at the University of Texas at Dallas and has authored thousands of books or co-authored.
So
good morning, Dr. Maxwell.
Yes, I've co-authored, I've published, I have shepherded many books into existence. I love books.
You do.
People.
And
that's
apparently
right.
Sports, too, I guess.
Love sports. I love sports psychology. And, of course, I've been teaching it oh so many years now. I'm in my third decade of teaching sports psychology at University of Texas at Dallas.
That's amazing.
I'm a comet through and through.
A comet. Go Comets.
Yeah, go Comets.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Comets.
Oh, I love your laugh, Craig.
Oh, well.
You just
well, thank
the
you,
way
Dr.
your whole
Maxwell.
Face lights up. So good morning, George.
Good morning,
Craig.
Good morning.
Ooh, I'm feeling pretty gay this morning.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I got a good night's sleep, had a nice breakfast, and I'm just really in a good mood.
You're happy.
Yes, there indeed. These are truly the gay days.
Well,
as they say.
I guess you could call them that.
The dog days of. Oh, boy.
Having a little coffee. Quite a sip.
Nobody drinks coffee like that.
What happened?
I don't swallow. Okay, let's talk about this. You know, I don't know if you guys recently saw the news story about the sale of the Lakers.
Yes.
Yes, well, I don't know if you know this, but I've done a pretty amount of work in this area.
What?
Pretty
get
good amount of work.
Buying a team is a lot of stress. Yeah. And I actually did a book on this. Called Jungian Precepts and the Application of Theory on Diverse Modalities of Sports Ownership and Implied Variations on the Mean.
Well, it's a long title.
And, it was eventually released in paperback and retitled Ballin'.
Yeah, we can all relate to that.
With a pick of a Rolls Royce and a stack of cocaine on a pair of titties.
On a pair of what?
Oh, the footwear.
The sandals?
Yes. Oh,
yes, the
yes.
footwear okay. which a woman had placed over her breast. I was not responsible for the artwork and the retitling. Yes,
right.
I thought that was stupid. But anyway, it did come out, and it did sell, you know, I would say several dozen.
Okay.
But, I felt very good about that. But for the preparation for the meat.
For the preparation for the book. The preparation
yes,
for the book.
Yes! It's obvious what I'm saying.
Okay.
It's the research that I did for the book. Yes, I talked to over 47 current and former major sports franchise owners.
That's a lot.
I believe the actual figure was 68.
Current and firmer.
Yes, yes. That's what I said. Why are you pointing that out again?
Just clarifying.
And they all had several things in common. It was very fascinating. All of them are what I would consider to be wealthy. All of them had purchased their franchise after they had been successful in other businesses. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes, and this may come as a shock to a lot of your viewers, but a lot of times, sports ownership was not their first job.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
That makes sense.
You know, a lot of them started, you know, with like a, as a teenager, they would, you know, work at a shop or something like that or at another business.
How
they
revealing your research.
Sports ownership is not ever seen as entry level.
Yeah. And then just own a team after leaving college.
Well, I have the science that proves it.
Okay.
Right. Your intuition may be that it's not an entry-level job, but I actually found the facts.
Okay.
So I did build a profile of the typical Spooch owner, and all of them overwhelmingly white, overwhelmingly male, overwhelmingly heterosexual, and all of them over 50. And this is interesting. It's a little bit interesting, but I found this, that it was a quality that all of them had, that they were not risk takers.
That was
interesting to me, yes. I would describe all of them as being risk averse, in fact.
Wow.
They were all well aware that Spooch franchises only go up in value, and it was a sure deal. They did not feel like this was gambling in any way on Spooch ownership. The only one that I interviewed that was a risk taker was a local NFL owner. Jerry Jones.
Yeah, he'd be the only one.
He was a risk taker, but not really even in business, though. Mainly in the drinking and partying space. That's where he did most of his risk taking. Yeah. Yes, partying around people that had cell phones, things like this.
Yeah.
Very risky behavior. Going into steakhouse restrooms with people who were weren't as much his wife as maybe some other status that they had. But he even shared a fascinating tale of taking an enormous risk in the bathroom of a Little Rock airport, right?
Unflippin' believable.
Right after a counter attendant cut up his credit cards.
It was a
fascinating story.
Yeah.
But that story is detailed in my book. It's called Pulling Out of the Gate a Little Too Late by Jerry Jones.
Yeah,
it's an amazing story of an expanding family.
He agreed to write that.
That's the tagline, yes.
Interesting.
Yes. And, but it's about Jerry Jones and his checkered aviation procreation history.
Right.
And, but the other owners knew that buying a team was a sure bet, oftentimes tripling in value in a few years. Mm-hmm. I was the one who actually found the figures of what they bought the team for and then what they sold it for.
Well,
collect and collate that information.
Good for you.
But Spurs ownership surely is a fascinating sports psychology subtopic.
It
can be explored in depth.
Be what?
Explored in depth.
Explored.
Okay. Yes, and I brought some Spurs books for you.
Oh,
I
good.
Have them here in my satchel.
Okay.
And this is called Gotti by Dak Prescott. And it is a look at the most notorious New York crime boss of the 80s. Getting into some historical biography territory like this. How he found time to write this.
Yeah, that's something.
I have no idea.
Didn't know he had an interest.
Now, some people may have heard that and thought he was talking about the other Gotti, you know, the greatest offense there is, as Dak has called it. Mm-hmm. But actually, that's not what he calls it. He calls it Gotti Oot. Greatest offense there is on our team right now.
Oh, clarification.
That's a little wordy.
Yes, yes. By Dak Prescott. I also have a book here. This one is it actually rhymes. It's called Shoddy, A Study in Whiteness by Marshall Mathers. And I have a book about the defense, the Cowboys' defense.
Oh.
It's called Al Bettley. At least better than last year by Deron Bland. He wrote a book about
it. Oh, interesting.
That's what the defense is calling themselves.
Before they've even played
it
down.
Al Bettley.
Al Bettley. Okay, that may stick.
And then this, I think you really enjoyed this one. I only have one copy of this, so you guys are going to have to share it.
Okay.
It's called I Got Paid, Now I'm Ready to Rock the League with Huge Hits and Huger Farts by Quinnen Williams.
Quinnen Williams wrote a book. Okay. About his new
contract. He's notorious for his flatulence. Matter of fact, I have another book here. I think I brought it with you. Yes, I did. Here, it's called 7.8 on the Richter Scale. It's the story of the famous fart Quinnen Williams cut in one stadium tunnel, written by Sauce Gardner.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, I'll take that one.
Okay.
And then this is a breakthrough book, and I'll leave you with this one. It's called For $28 Billion, I Would Actually Consider Selling by Jerry Jones. I don't want to tell you what it's about.
Wow, okay.
I don't want to tell you what it's about.
I want to read that.
You're not going to get it out of me. Even if you tie me down to a leather bench and tickle me with a feather, I will not tell you what it's about.
All right. We believe you.
Bye, Dr. Crawford.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you go. There he goes.
So the CBS Sports president, a guy named David Burson, spoke today. It was the NFL Media Day for CBS up in Manhattan.
Is that the guy that you met?
Where would I meet him?
Where were we that there was a guy from CBS Sports?
Oh, no, that was a golf guy.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Where were we?
We were in Phoenix, yeah, and he was asking about Colt Nost because that was his hire, and he was like, what do y'all think of Colt? No, but that guy is in charge of golf.
Okay.
So in a tangential way, Romo. So he spoke today, and he issued a statement right out of the chute saying it's an evolving situation, and therefore we're still assessing. And by the way, before anybody raised their hand, he goes, let me address the elephant in the room. He says, since it continues to evolve and we're on the eve of the season, I felt it's very important that our team have certainty and direction so we can definitively plan and focus on the production and marketing as we kick off the season. In making this decision, we have to consider the impact on our image and on our brand. That is very important to us. And as he said, it's an evolving situation. There's no finality to it whatsoever.
Yeah, there's no finality because there's not a resolution to the problem for Romo yet. So they can't do anything definitive to punish him or to fire him, but they want a distance.
Yeah.
The level of that statement is enough to make you think that they're moving on. But they're also being extremely careful so that they don't owe him $70 to $80 million more. Which they may still either way. That's the thing, is if we believe that CBS has been looking for an exit strategy, and that's thought of by some, but also a bit on the subjective side, then the question is, could CBS make it work? I mean, this is very much seen in college football all the time where you want to get rid of your coach, but we're not going to pay this guy $70 million to walk away. A couple schools might. But in the case of Romo, I assume CBS would love to pull the parachute, but they're not going to do it if they have to pay him out the rest of his contract. And then you get into, well, what if they made him do studio work? Or what if they put him on the fourth team or something like that and basically dare him to quit sort of situation? And that gets extremely awkward. I don't think they want that. So I don't know, but I assume there was a way to say it today that did not sound like we're about to fire him as soon as our lawyers can make it happen.
Right.
But I took from that lengthy statement that they are tap dancing because they know they're going to have to explain whatever they say today in a month when it actually gets out. This felt rehearsed. This felt...
They've spent a long time on this statement.
Right.
Yeah, give Tony some space when he's good. We love him here. He'll be right back where he belongs as one of, if not the best commentator in all of football. They could have said that. Instead, what was the wording again? Like, it's...
Image and brand are very important to us, and that was that. That's the line that sticks.
Yeah, when they're talking about image, even if the charges don't stick to Romo, or it's just a ticket and he pays a fine and that's it, that it's a incredibly bad look, and it does not fit the image that they want to project.
It's a bad look, but it's also a look that Al Michaels got a DUI 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what happened to Al Michaels? Nothing. If Troy Aikman got a DUI, and again, it's all relative. If it looked the same as Tony Romo's,
yeah, was there was
nothing's
there,
going to happen to Troy Aikman? It's just not.
What was there? like POV cam of the Al Michaels arrest?
I don't know. But, I mean, he dodged a DUI checkpoint. There was a checkpoint that said DUI checkpoint ahead. And what does he do? He makes an illegal U-turn. So they baited him into it. And then he blew, you know, over the legal limit. So, again, it depends on who you are. This is not minimizing a DUI at all. But guys have outrun and gals have outrun DUIs before. And no one's even batted an eye. It's just like they made a mistake, and we expect better. And the end, it's over. So this is, in making this decision, we have to consider the impact on our image and on our brand. That's very important to us. That's really all you need to know. They're looking for a way out.
How long did Marv Albert have to go away?
Dude, I mean, think about that.
Was that a decade?
I don't think it was
that long, but I would believe 3 to 5 years.
I mean, he's on all fours with panties around his head and stuff. And
I thought he was wearing them.
Well, maybe so, yeah.
Yeah, I think he was wearing some negligee.
But, yeah.
From his Dallas hotel room.
Yes, it happened here.
Okay, so he was fired in September of 97. Then in 1999, TNT brought him back for basketball. And then in 2000, he was rehired by NBC Sports.
Dave, have you ever had this sentence written about you? She found him wearing white panties and a garter belt.
Not yet.
If she finds you wearing white panties and a garter belt.
Is the garter belt also white?
We don't have a color on the garter belt.
I mean, I would assume it's a matching set.
Yeah, you want a matching set. What's the of Hollywood lingerie place?
Fredericks of Hollywood. Yeah.
they would never mismatch colors,
the
would they?
Of Hollywood place. Does that place still exist?
Sure, right?
I don't know.
That's probably mail order only. Online only.
Well, we'll see. The season is 32 days away and it doesn't look like that CBS is.
Maybe we're wrong.
I think they're just looking for an out. Like, how can they maneuver?
Or maybe they were taking everybody's temperature today to see.
Right.
So we're kind of thinking, what would you say if we?
How can you make this a win-win for you? That's what CBS is thinking, where you can get out of this.
For a cause
and not have to pay him X amount of dollars. That's the ultimate. And
that's what every broadcast company is looking for.
And I would bet you that in the end, it's going to be a settlement and Romo's going to come out of this with $50 million or something like that.
Yeah, that's probably.
Which, Dave?
Yeah.
And then Netflix can't.
So I hand you a bottle. Just say, go see what the payout is, man.
Netflix can't wait to hire him
whatever. Of course.
Relax.
As the Rangers are out on the West Coast. And we're big fans of Jared Sandler. We've known him since he was in high school. He's doing a really good job. But it is different tuning in and not hearing Dave, but you get to hear him this morning here on The Ticket. Morning, Dave.
Good morning. Yeah, it's just nice to have a platform to, you know, get things off your mind, even as you're not able to do it every night on the air. And it's always good to hear your guys' voice.
Well, same. And yeah, I went through this about, I guess it was 8 years ago when our youngest went off to college and we became empty nesters. And I know you're doing that this week. It's okay. You'll make it through all right. But it is that is a tough one.
Really? There is light on the other side of this?
Yes.
It doesn't feel like it in the moment, man.
I know. How's your baby going to make it without you? I know, but it works out okay.
Well, I'm glad to know that, and I do know some other empty nesters. It's weird. As you become one, it turns out a lot of people around you are already there, and so they're all surviving, but I am not. It is not my strength, man, letting the kids go and saying goodbye and all that. I just hate it so much. And I'm kind of probably an emotional person, I guess is how you describe it. So anyway, I'm keeping it together so far, and it'll be a lot of work today and tomorrow, and I'll try to get lost in that, and then I'll take my time afterward and just sort of bury myself in sorrow.
Well, it'll be okay, and if it's anything like my experience, she'll even have more to say now. So you'll have plenty of conversation around the house still. So,
oh, it'll man.
Be okay. It'll be
oh,
okay.
That's awesome. Oh, geez. I'm looking forward to that.
No. Oh. But, yeah, call me if you ever just want to talk it out. As bros, we'll talk you through that one. But to the baseball field, it's been better this last week. Not necessarily what happened last night, but – man, the Dauber was down after last Monday night's loss to the Giants. But since then, this has been a better week.
Yeah, once again, we find them in a spot where you're like, well, maybe I'm feeling really good about it. Maybe this team can really make a push. So another 4-game win streak, as you mentioned, after that loss to the Giants. I think they've gone 5-2, even with last night's little bump in the road. And just generally, I feel like playing good baseball. The starting pitching has looked a lot better. Getting Cody Bradford back is a very welcome addition. So, and I'd hoped, certainly based on what we had seen from Cody in the past, that he would come back and look like that really tough pitcher, and boy has he. I mean, last night was amazing. Gave him 7 innings in his second start back. So if that's going to be the case, if he can come back and pitch anywhere near like he has in his first 2 appearances, and when and if they get Jack Leiter back, which shouldn't be too far off, then I think that starting pitching really, really takes shape, and you can start to visualize where this can go.
The Astros and Rangers are shadowing each other. When one wins, the other wins. When one loses, the other loses. There's a half a game that separates the two. Seattle is 4.5 back now. Our feelings seem to change every week about the AL West race, but here we've got 6.5 weeks or so to go. How are you feeling about this Astros-Rangers dance, and do you think the Mariners have anything in them where they can get it together and make a push?
Well, the Mariners certainly have enough talent. But it's one of those where you look from the outside and it just appears as if they are not going to quite put it together. A little like the Toronto Blue Jays. It's hard to imagine those two teams. They had that fantastic American League Championship Series last year. They were so good, and it looks pretty clear right now that neither of them will be back anywhere near that, neither of them likely to make the postseason. So, and that to me just, while it's hard to explain, it seems to indicate something going on in that clubhouse or in that mix of guys. It just isn't quite right. And with barely more than 40 games remaining, it's hard to see where they're going to come up with the time to bounce back and make a run. So then that leaves you with the two teams, the two Texas teams at the top of the division, and how it will play out between them. And right now, to some degree, it not that it doesn't matter, it matters, but the other one would be the wild card. So it's possible that this division, as bad as it has been, would get two teams in.
That's amazing.
So figure that, right? Yeah. I mean, make sense of that, but that's where we are. So. But I like the Rangers' chances. I just think they've got a better, deeper pitching staff than Houston, and hopefully that will bear out over the last 40-plus games.
Well, and it does seem to favor them, too, that they have so many games against teams that are not very good. They got a lot of home games in September. That should help out. But as we have talked about throughout this season, and we were just talking about it the other day, it's almost like it doesn't matter what type of opponent it is or if you're playing at home or away, over the last year and 3/4 now, this team is .500. It's almost like, I mean, it doesn't matter what the situation is, you know?
Yeah, it's like that old Seinfeld Even Steven bit that he did years ago. Like, this team could literally throw a $20 bill out the window of their fourth floor apartment and find a $20 bill and an old sport coat, you know, a couple minutes later.
Yeah.
They're 60 and 60 after going 81 and 81 last year. And they'll go on a 5-game run where they'll win 4 and then they'll drop 3 of the next 5. And it's just the same sort of feeling over and over and over again. And to me, the weird part is how certain teams make it really tough on them. They have a little trouble with this Angels team. They've split the first two. But for some reason, this Angels team, which has been so terrible all year, plays the Rangers really well. And that's what's weird about the game is you just don't know why and which matchups are going to play out the way they do. But this is one of them. The Rangers do not enjoy playing Houston. That is just not a good matchup for them. They played Seattle well, but it's just sometimes it's about the handedness of the pitching staff or whatever. But yeah, it's been a very 500 team, and it does look like 500 or just slightly above this year is going to be enough to get in.
It even goes back further than that. Tip sheet Tyler from our crew went back to the 2024 season, and he went back to June 17th. From that point, the Rangers finished the 2024 season 45-45.
Oh, man.
So then the next year they went 81-81, and this year they're 60-60. So in their last 372 games, dating back to June 17th of 2024, they are 186-186. Isn't that incredible? That's a big sample.
That is a big sample. And I did not realize that. I hadn't thought to go back and look at the finish to the 24 season. That's crazy.
Isn't it?
It's just crazy. Yeah. And has it felt that way though? Cause I don't know that it's felt that way to me, because it's almost like such a struggle all the time that it almost doesn't feel like they've even been 500, but they have been. So I guess it is what it is. The game, it's a wild game, man. Baseball's just such a weird game. Good luck figuring it out.
Yeah, and maybe it doesn't feel that way because they're, you know, baseball can also be a game of streaks. And when they go on a good 6-game run, they feel, well, they're much better than a 500 team. But then they'll have a 6-game skid, and it feels like the world is coming to an end.
Yeah. I think you tend to see like the possibilities, and you get just so excited about it when you see them have a good stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And like, now that's what I'm talking about. That's the team that I thought was in there. And that's probably true, right? If they stay healthy, if this, you know, a lot of ifs. But the fact is that where you get tested is in your depth every year, because you're going to use just, 25 position players, 25 pitchers, roughly. And so how much depth do you have? How good are those guys who slip in behind when guys get hurt? And to the Rangers' credit this year, that's where they've excelled. Ezekiel Duran's been so good. Justin Foscue's had a really nice year. Some of the pickups that they've been able to make over the course of the summer have been really, really helpful. And that's what it takes. If you're going, yes, your big guys are going to have to carry the load, but any great team, it's always about those supporting actors and do they perform for you? I think that the year the Rangers went to the won the World Series in 23, who could have ever seen, the Jonah Heim season? Again, it was Zeke that year who filled in so well for Seager. But it's those guys on the margins who have to perform well for a team to do well, and that takes depth. And I think that's what it usually comes down to.
You mentioned health with Eovaldi going on the 15-day. That's the hope is, okay, a couple of weeks and he'll be fine. But, man, that's just for a 37-year-old or even a 27-year-old, the elbow inflammation is always a big scare.
It is. And there's probably not many ways to dress that up and make it look better than it is. It's probably just not that good. And so, especially when you're talking the limited number of games left this year. So More will come out in the coming days, but that's a bummer and that's frightening. But I think, you know, this is the cruel part of the game is guys, they call it the invisible list, because all of a sudden you feel like you just don't exist, because it's immediately the instinct is, okay, well, when will Leiter be back? Are we a couple of days away? And so now we just start to look at how does it look and feel with Leiter in there instead of Eovaldi, and you begin to project and I do think that when Jack's healthy, he can be as good as anybody in this rotation. He was pitching largely through that ankle issue earlier in the year, and when he comes back and he's healthy, I think he'll be really good. So the good news for the Rangers is I think they've had a little depth in the pitching, just enough at times to cover these guys once one falls off. You get somebody coming back, Bradford, now hopefully a Jack Leiter who can slip in there and steady the ship. So, but that's terrible news for Evo, and there is something about his presence as a personality that's really, really important in there too. So they're going to miss him for whatever the length of time is that he's going to be down.
Well, we appreciate the time this morning. Hang in there. Have a good week, and we'll do this again next Wednesday.
Right on. Thank you, fellas. I will soothe my aching soul, this next week with Musers, the podcast. And with that, boy, what is it, 7 o'clock? Looking here.
Now, we've been so busy with vacation and Cowboys training camp that we have not had a chance to talk to our old friend, our favorite octogenarian, Jesse the Usher, who we understand was working some of the World Cup matches. So he joins us now on the Ticket Hotline. Good morning, Jesse.
You're going to talk to me. You're going to have to speak up, young fella.
Hey, Jesse. It's the Musers.
I hear you. That's good.
How you doing?
Well, I'm sad this morning.
Why?
Because as of today, this morning, right now, I'm announcing my retirement from the fine art of ushering.
No.
Oh, my God.
Really?
I am, and it's been a good one. It's been a good career. I was an innovator in the world of ushering. I was the one who developed the technique of ultra-modern and also the technique of ultra-nasty.
Wow.
Yeah. Did y'all know that I was the one who came up with the idea of showing people to their seats?
Really?
That was your right. Well, you have been around a long time.
Before then, ushers were instructed to just point people in the opposite direction of where the seats were to produce maximum confusion. That was the prevailing wisdom of the day. They thought it would lead to a better sport experience, you know. But yeah, with my background in science and leather work and a bunch of other things, I come up with a better way of just let's tell them where the seats are.
Yeah, that seems logical. Okay.
I was known as the thinking man's usher.
Well,
I invented modern ushering, George, and I don't think you're recognizing that.
No, I'm listening. I recognize that, and you've been around.
Did you know I was the only man to appear four times on the cover of Modern Usher magazine?
See, well, no, I didn't know that.
Didn't know they had that magazine.
Oh, yeah. I came up with the idea of numbering seats and lettering rows.
Wow.
Man.
You're quite the innovator.
I even invented the concept of sections.
So you're not going to usher for the Rangers, Mavericks, nobody?
Nobody. Retirement, George. That's what it means. I'm getting old, too.
Well,
you know, I can't do it like I used to. Yeah. And I've accomplished just about all I can accomplish, you know, in ushering. I'm a two-time inductee into the Ushering Hall of Fame.
Two-time inductee?
Once as a solo usher in 1995, and the other as part of the 2002 Ushering Dream Team. me and Organized Sam and On Time Sally.
Huh.
Quiet Down Quentin. We all went in together as an Ushering Dream Team.
Wow.
Okay, kind of like time the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame then.
Time to call it adios, as they say in Columbia or somewhere down there. I can't remember what they... But, yeah, the World Cup just about did me in.
Yeah, how was that?
Horrible.
Why? Wow.
The worst.
Oh.
And I'm as, look, I'm as far from xenophobic as you can get. You know, I'm not xenophobic. I just hate people from other countries.
Well, gosh.
And, oh, my goodness, during that World Cup, we got so many Japanese and Britons and Dutched-up people from Holland. And
well, that's what it's just about, though. It's about celebrating the world.
Sickening to see our borders so porous like that. No, the World Cup was for America. That's why we had it in America, so Americans could see it.
Well,
you know, during that World Cup, we had so many foreigners all over the place up in here, and and I, you know, I thought Trump's built that wall. What happened?
Well,
I mean, I guess during Biden time, Fauci busted a few holes in that wall to allow his Wuhan friends from Britain to come streaming in here to take up our free health care and our high-paying jobs and our good seats.
Well, now, you just threw a lot at us,
yeah,
Jesse.
They flew here as visitors, and that's part of the World Cup, is that we celebrate the fact that you know, this is one big world and we all get along.
Young man, you need to realize this is not what I fought for in World War II. Okay?
Yes, it is. It's peace. This is what you
I
fought
didn't.
For.
Hey, listen. Hey, hold up there. Hold your britches. I didn't run a bayonet through a messed up Nazi woman just so some dude from Manchester could come to Jerry World and act a fool yelling for a Ted Lasso sport.
Well, I want to hear more about that woman that you
and, and these Nazi Japanese soccer fans from Tokyo. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
By the way, Japanese is such a long term. Is there a way to shorten that?
Well, no, there's not.
No,
there's
Japanese
not.
Japanese or something like that,
no.
Maybe?
No.
Anyway, they were all over here drinking up all our ranch. We had a ranch shortage because of that.
We didn't have a shortage.
So unless something changes pretty drastically pretty soon, I'm going to retire to Rockwall County. I got a farm out there where I raise chickens and tigers.
Tigers?
Yeah, I got a tiger place there, and I'm going to record some country songs and grow a mullet. I'm going to do the whole thing.
Oh, no.
Don't do that.
I'm going to do the whole thing because ushering just ain't for Jesse no more.
Well, that's very sad news. You were the best.
Plus, my knee's giving me problems. Starting to act up on me. And also, I need a full skeleton replacement.
Oh, wow. That's
full skeleton.
That's intense.
Yeah. So, I wish you well, and I want to say goodbye to the audience and just tell them no funeral.
No, this can't be our last visit. No, stop that. All right. We'll get him back on.
Speaking of California and Cowboys training camp, now that the ticket team is home, we need to check in on how things are going and how things went over the weekend. So joining us now on the Ticket Hotline is the owner and general manager of the Cowboys. We say good morning to Jerry Jones. How are you?
Is it a good one this morning? Y'all having a good one?
It's all good.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I'm just wanted to make mention that I was very sad to see the passing of Don Nelson.
Yes, we were all sad.
I was not only a fan of Don, but I was a friend of his. Mm-hmm. Knew him very well. We met in a support group called Fathers of Unknown Children and Kids.
Right off the bat. Unbelievable.
I can't remember the acronym for that, but that was the name of the organization. That's a long name.
Let's not use the acronym.
And, of course, he and I both found out we had some verrucas later in life. So we bonded over that.
Okay.
You know, we both had some restroom lovemaking in airports. And then some
kids
were born.
I don't know about that.
And then a support group happened. So that's what happened.
Yes.
But let me just say, candidly, that camp is not the same since y'all have left.
Oh.
We love having y'all out here. We've got all your albums, and we just really enjoy the excitement that the ticket brings out here.
Well, thanks,
and,
Jerry.
Absolutely.
George.
Yeah, it was George.
Yeah. I heard you played the Pebble Beach.
I did, yeah.
Did you like that?
Oh, man, it's the best.
I played it so many times. Have you?
You?
I didn't know you were a golfer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm not a very good golfer, but I love Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
And I've had a few Veruca-making restroom moments there, too.
Oh, my gosh. Stop it.
Oh, I'm having fun. I'm having a lot of fun. Hey, Mike Ducey. Want to send his thoughts and prayers out to him. He had a horrible accident on the field on Friday afternoon.
Oh, gosh.
So we've had to hire a farm hazmat team to come out there and disinfect the field.
A farm hazmat team.
He lost control of the bowels.
I didn't know they had farm hazmat.
Yeah. But great training camp. Great training camp so far.
You think so?
I'm really excited about this year's training camp. I think it was so far it's really done the job that we wanted it to do. And merchandise is up 14%, attendance up 20%, and sushi at Nobu is even better this year. So this is really looking good for our football team.
That's how you think. That's how you measure a training camp.
Hey, George, guess what? Mm. We put a new trolling motor on the Bravo Eugenia.
They don't have trolling motors on yachts.
It's got the GPS on it so we can hover over him fish. And then we also got this little machine that deploys dynamite to shock him to the surface.
Oh, my God. That's not fishing.
So Jerry Jr. can scoop him up in his undersized minnow net. That's his favorite thing. He loves catching minnows. He loves it. I tell you, I love it out here. I hate y'all are back here in Dallas because it's God's country out here. The weather's so nice.
That's really pretty.
I'm thinking maybe when I get old, I might retire out here.
Well, I don't think you'll ever retire.
When you get old.
You know, I grew up out here, don't you?
That's right. Just
my
down
boyhood home. Yeah. Boyhood home was right here in the L.A. area. Mm-hmm. It's the house where my credit cards were cut up at Love Field.
I think you're confusing stories there.
Did you know I even discovered my first oil well when I was 8 years old in my backyard out here?
Wow, really?
Yeah, I thought I was a genius, too. Now, looking back on it, I think my dad went out there and planted an oil well out there for me to find.
Maybe.
But what a sweet thing to do to encourage a kid to be self-made like that.
Yeah.
By planting an oil well out there for him since you're already rich.
Plant an oil well.
Can we please talk a little football?
Yes, yeah, we'd love ahead. To.
We're scrimmaging a Ram tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And then we're playing the Seahawks on Saturday.
Right.
And if we win that Seahawks game, that is basically like winning the Super Bowl this year.
It doesn't mean anything. It's because a preseason game.
Hey, it's beating last year's Super Bowl champ.
Yeah.
So, therefore, that would be this year's Super Bowl win.
Well, that's a stretch.
That is a stretch.
Considering neither team will play any starters.
Well, how do you know that?
Well, I guess
that's
I don't.
True. We don't know yet.
You don't understand shoddy ball. Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Did y'all deploy Dr. Vaginitis on my players?
Yes. Dr. Vaginissimus, yes.
You did not ask me about that.
Sorry.
You didn't ask permission, and one of my players come up to me, and he said that some mad scientist from Britain, England came up and told him something about strangling a tiger on a shipwreck or something.
Yeah, it was a weird tale.
It was very strange. And, well, I'd appreciate it if you cleared that with me first, because he was a little upset.
Oh,
sorry about that.
He was upset that it was the only British scientist that interviewed him. So we need to have more Dr. Vaginas out there.
I agree.
All right. Well, let's do it. Where is he? Is he there? Can I talk to him real quick?
No, he's not.
What about Muffin? Is he there?
Muffin is here, yeah.
Yeah, he is. Hang on a second.
Hey, Muffin.
Yeah. What's going on?
Do you understand shoddy ball?
Oh, yeah. Hottest thing. Well, shouting ball.
Will you come by the Star here next weekend and explain it to me?
Okay. All right, Jerry.
All right.
Hey, let's go out and party, too.
Let's do it. Let's do some bathroom lovemaking. You and me, Muffet.
All right, Jerry. See you later.
Just the two of us. Just
see you later.
Us.
Go Cowboys.
Okay. Go Cowboys.
All right.
Wow.
Boy.